The After Dark newsletter was started by Art Bell back in 1995, and it's still going strong 13 years later. Call right now to subscribe. It's $39.95 for 1 year and contains a variety of different subjects every month, just like we do here on Coast to Coast AM. There are stories about the supernatural, strange science, human oddities, plus you'll find interviews with frequent guests, my monthly column, and much more. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com.
Here's some exciting news for Coast to Coast fans. If you're already a Streamlink member, you know what a super value our subscriber service is. For around 15 cents a day, you get such great features as podcast. That's automatic downloads of Coast to Coast shows directly onto your computer desktop or MP3 player. But now, we've greatly expanded our full show library, so you have access to multi-year downloads. Imagine having hundreds of your favorite Coast to Coast shows right at your fingertips to listen to, collect, and take on the go with you. As a Streamlink member, you also get access to a whole library of Art Bell Classic Somewhere in Time shows, available as streamed broadcasts. Plus, our fun live chat sessions, held twice a month. There's never been a better time to join Streamlink. Visit coasttocoastam.com today to sign up on our secure servers. Here's what you missed on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Is disclosure right around the corner?
My scenario for disclosure is this. I believe that we've already discovered life on Mars. We discovered it decades ago, and we backed away from that story. That was to give everybody in institutions a chance to embrace the new paradigm of life in outer space. I think that's going to be an announcement, and it's not going to be too far in the future.
Now we take you back to the night of March 27th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, here is Brian Walker, a.k.a. Rocket Guy. Brian, let's pick up where we left off. Assuming that, I mean, what if all this works? If your test rockets go fine, your first personal flight goes fine, even the big flight goes fine, would there be anything else, or would you then say, look, I have achieved my goal, I've made history, so I quit?
You know, I've given a lot of thought to that, and I think that there's a very good chance that that's probably where I'd be at. I'm already getting really tired because I've been at this for so long. And, you know, getting back a couple of the questions that guy asked, why am I doing this? And, you know, I don't think I can sit and give you an absolute definitive, exact answer other than the fact that there's a drive to do this that kind of propels me on.
Why?
Well, I guess maybe it's a combination of the fact that, you know, I've always been totally intrigued by space, and the idea of being able to travel in space has just been, you know, one of those things that I've always wished I could do. Secondly, is the idea of approaching a project of this size and actually carrying through and doing it, kind of like a completing a life doctorate. You know, this is kind of the thing that,
I can respect that. Yes. All right.
The third thing, if I might just add this also, having, you know, in the past 22 months, I've had about 11 million hits on my website and probably about close to 10,000 emails. And the kind of emails I get from people, the majority of them are so incredible. The amount of support and people telling me how the fact that I'm approaching this dream has given them the motivation to go after their dream. And I'm beginning to see that there's something much bigger maybe here that I never really expected. So there's a number of reasons that are driving me to do this.
Well, that also is pressure, though.
It is pressure. It's a lot of pressure. And that's one of the reasons that I was really happy to be able to get back on your show, is because I know that for every maybe 200 or 300 emails I get that are great, positive, and wonderful, I'll get one, you know, that I've had some pretty ugly emails from people. And there again, fortunately, they're...
What kind of ugly? I mean, did they call you a lunatic or...
Worse than that. I mean, I had some people that are just, I think they're just angry because for some reason, I don't know. you know, like I said, fortunately, they're very, very few and far between. I get some people that originally would say, well, you know, you're nuts or whatever, and I can deal with that because...
But you said anger. That's interesting. There's always angry... I did a program last night, and I knew it was coming. And I just knew it was coming. The kind of subject material we dealt with last night. Just reams of angry email. And so I'm used to that. Anybody in my position is. But what kind of angry? I mean, what appeared to motivate the anger in those few that you did get?
Oh, I don't, you know, maybe just disturbed people. I mean, I've had some from people just like, you know, you're going to die, you're going to burn, I'm going to laugh, da da da, kind of, you know, just some disturbed stuff.
Oh, that's kind.
Yeah.
I hope this is not a rude question, but you have had at some point in your life a competent psychiatric exam, so, I mean, you are... balanced, more or less, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I've always considered that what separates a sane person from an insane person is the sane person stops on occasion to question their sanity. Fortunately, I do that a lot. You know, one of the questions that last caller had, or the last one you asked about my disorder, I'm like, well, which disorder? Because I'm highly dyslexic. I've always been dyslexic. Everything's, you know... It's one of the reasons I was a horrible student when I got out of high school. That was it for me as far as formal education.
You have dyslexia.
Yeah. I mean,
now,
isn't that
bad in the rocket business?
I don't personally. I've never really thought of dyslexia as a disorder. I see it as something that appears as a disorder in a world where things are used to a certain way. But if you go back historically, people that have always been considered brilliant or have done big things in life and stuff, I think you find that most of them, they would...
A little crazy.
Be considered dyslexic, though. I see things forward to backward, and as an inventor, it's very beneficial to be able to see a project from the finished date and kind of, in my own mind, back-engineer it. It does cause problems in other areas, though. I went up flying yesterday to get pictures of the property to put in the website, and
aerial shots we have. You just got those, huh?
I just took those yesterday. The newest ones. The newest ones that show the completed dome.
Yes.
And so I don't have a license. I've flown with friends and family members all my life, but so a buddy of mine called them up and we went and got an airplane, and I still get up there and every so often it's like I'll push something when I should pull something. So dyslexia.
Well, that's why I was saying, though, in the rocket business, pushing or pulling at the right moment would be...
I'm designing everything to be not... It's not so much of a disability.
In other words, it's dyslexia-friendly.
It's... No, well, it's nothing that's too... It's, you know, like I said, I don't have problems driving or anything like that. The point is, it's like, it's just... there and it's part of me and it makes certain things
maybe difficult. You just need little signs if necessary pull this damn it Brian don't push it
yeah push don't pull
that's right all right well you know Raven in Modesto says okay then Art should we call your guest Brian Skywalker?
No but it's interesting I got an email from a Brian Walker in Scotland today.
Did you really?
Yeah. I've had emails from all over the world. I've done 334 radio interviews in the past 22 months. I mean, all over, and 58 TV shows. And you know, the thing is here is like, I never in my wildest dreams expected 2 years ago when I did my first story that this thing was going to continue. I mean, I thought after the launch, of course, there'd be tons of interest in this, but it's just been this juggernaut, and there's been times when I just wanted to completely stop anything, but really the thing that's kept me doing, you know, interviews and stuff is the fact that there's times really when it's extremely difficult to motivate myself to go down to the shop and work on this, because at times the project just seems too big. And
well, have you had volunteers, and have you accepted volunteers? I mean, in the actual work part of this, I would think a number of people would volunteer, and out of that number, a few would be good souls who really would work.
I've had lots and lots of people that have offered to volunteer. They want to come work here and work with me and stuff. The problem is I really enjoy my solitude and being just doing things on my own. I have one fella here locally, a young guy, Dave.
Plus, of course, if something goes wrong, you only have yourself.
Well, it's not only that, but it's just like, for instance,
Or actually, your new Russian wife would only have.
Right. Having too many people around would be difficult just because it would upset the flow of things, and trying to relay what I want done to someone else and not being concerned about wanting to watch, look over their shoulders and stuff like that. It's a very difficult thing.
I see that.
To give up. This one guy that does come work, he comes a couple days a week. And
it's kind of like packing your own parachute, right?
Well, yes. I mean, there's a lot of things that I just, this has been my baby and my project forever, and I want to do as much of it as I can. And there may become a point in time where I decide to bring in some more help, you know, as I've already done in certain parts, like the rocket motors and things like that.
Now, going back to the full-scale model, if you're up 30 miles, essentially, there's no air, right?
There's no air.
In fact, where does the, good, easily breathable air is about 13,005, somewhere in there, feet?
Well, yeah, yes. For instance,
beyond that, you better have an oxygen mask. It is recommended. And then where does the air really begin to disappear?
Well, for instance, if you're flying an airplane, you need supplemental oxygen. I think it's over 12,000 or 12,500 feet.
Yeah, somewhere in there. Right.
If you go skydiving, for instance, you can go up to that altitude and jump. Now, if you start getting, the higher you go above that, of course, then you begin suffering hypoxia and you start losing your ability to, you know, comprehend what's going on. And, of course, flying an airplane or anything like that.
Yeah, but again, you're going 30 miles. So what I'm asking is, where does the oxygen really start?
Well, I'm going to be in a fully pressurized. The capsule is fully pressurized. It'll be pressurized to 6 psi. And then also, one of the nice things here is that I managed to talk the Russian Space Agency into selling me a spacesuit. And I bought this. I have the same exact.
You have a spacesuit?
I have my own spacesuit.
A Russian spacesuit?
In fact, can I plug my website?
Of course, yes.
Rocketguy.com. There's pictures of my spacesuit.
Rocketguy.com.
Rocketguy.com. And, I got a Russian spacesuit, which is the same ones that they wear when they go up to the, when they go up in space. And it's not an EVA. There's basically two different types of spacesuits. You have your emergency spacesuit, and you have an EVA suit.
And this is an emergency?
This is an emergency suit. It's designed to provide an atmosphere around your body in the event of a catastrophic cabin pressure loss.
For how long?
Well, that depends on how the spacesuit itself is just a containment vessel.
Once again, so everybody understands, for example, the highest mountain in the world is what, 29,000 and change?
Right.
And at that point, they call it the death zone from about 25 to 20. Nine, somewhere in there is the death zone, and people die at that altitude readily, and so that's only miles 5,280 feet, so let's see, you're going to be out of air real quick.
I'll be out of air very quickly, but there again, like for instance, when I was in the MiG, that was at that altitude, of course, if there was a catastrophic cabin loss without the oxygen mask and pressure suit, you'd be in serious trouble there.
Yep.
But that's why I have the spacesuit. Now, the length of time, of course, that I could survive in the spacesuit depends on the life support system it's connected to. Yeah. Since this flight will only be about, in duration, 15 to 20 minutes long, the amount of air supply and the life support system that the spacesuit's hooked to has to only be a very short duration.
Tell me something. What will the view be like at 30 miles? You must know what it'll look like, roughly.
Well, I'll tell you, from looking at it from the MiG, and there's pictures on my website that I took from the MiG at 80,000 feet. You know, at that altitude, you could see a very well-defined curvature of the Earth.
Right. Oh, sure.
Oh, and looking at the edge of the Earth, you'd see the thin blue atmosphere, and it would go pitch dark.
Yes.
So that is going to be exacerbated considerably. It'll be quite a bit more defined at 30 miles up. And so, you know,
quite a bit is an understatement, I think. Big understatement. I at 30 miles, you'll be looking down on all the atmosphere.
Right. 99.99% of it.
Of the atmosphere.
Right.
At 30 miles, has your at your highest point, where will you be with respect to gravity?
Well, this is an interesting about gravity, that gravity remains constant for a very long ways in space. The reason that the people are weightless, experience weightlessness, for instance, in the space shuttle to the International Space Station,
yes,
is because the spacecraft is orbiting the Earth at 17,500 miles an hour, and the centrifugal force at that speed is exactly cancels out the pull of gravity.
But if you were to stop the space shuttle in its present orbit and just brought it to 0 miles per hour,
everybody would fall down and they'd have a percentage of gravity less than Earth, but it would be marginal. It wouldn't be like,
is that right?
Yeah, because that's why, because if you think about it, they're traveling 17,500 miles an hour. You consider that speed. Picture the same thing if you spin a bucket of water around over your head.
Right.
That water is glued to the inside surface. When you begin to slow that bucket down as you spin it, the water gets washy.
Yeah.
And if you slow enough, it'll fall down on top of you.
Yes.
So if you consider that the space shuttle is traveling at such an incredible speed, the centrifugal forces in there, if that was not being counteracted by the pull of gravity, would have them glued to the opposite side of the space shuttle. So that's kind of
in your flight, even though it's 30 miles up, you will not experience weightlessness at all. In fact, you'll have almost 1G at that altitude.
Well, no, what I'm basically told actually is that when I'm accelerating, I will be experiencing G-forces.
Of course, yes.
Once the engine shuts off, then I will go into basically a weightless period.
Oh, there will be a weightless period?
Yeah, for the period of time that I am actually in free flight, as I stop accelerating and coasting.
No kidding. Well, okay, for about how long do they estimate?
Well, that depends on there's a lot there that's kind of unknown at this point, just because, for instance, the rocket's going to consume 90 pounds of fuel per second. And so, as it's going to be putting out 12,000 pounds of thrust.
And at the fastest, how fast will you be going?
It could reach speeds of between Mach 3 and Mach 4.
Mach 3 and
4. By time it runs out of fuel in a 90-second period.
So you are going to break the sound barrier some number of times.
It'll break the sound barrier very quickly once within the first probably 20 seconds of launch, it will have already broken the
sound barrier. Now, I've broken the sound barrier. I've been in a jet, broken the sound barrier twice, a Mach 2 and better. How would you describe the feeling that you have when you break the sound barrier?
Well, you know, when I broke the sound barrier in the MiG, I didn't even know it. The only way I could tell was looking at the instruments, all the instruments that depend upon airflow. Vertical or the airspeed indicator and stuff.
Yes.
Just as you reach that point, they flutter. And other than that, I didn't have any feeling that I was breaking the sound barrier.
That's very interesting, because I went to Paris on the Concorde,
right.
and of course it's a very smooth flight, probably unlike the MiG. But in the Concorde, when we hit Mach 1, you could kind of feel a sort of a slight backward and then a slight forward motion. It was very subtle, but you could sort of feel a slight backward and then a forward motion. It was really interesting. Same deal at Mach 2.
Well, I'm very certain that different aircraft obviously have different characteristics.
That's
in that respect.
Probably true.
Now the MiG, of course, the sheer power of that thing is just mind-boggling. The engine, the two engines in this thing, and the exhausts on those engines are like 4.5 feet in diameter, and I mean it's just amazingly just a powerful thing. And actually, on the way down, when we got down to Mach 1.5 at 60,000 feet, he let me take the stick,
and I got to. He did.
I did barrel roll left and a barrel roll right going Mach 1.5.
Really?
That was the coolest thing I've done to date.
Was that included in the package?
Yeah. I mean, basically, the guy that my pilot, a guy named Alexander Gurnov, who's a very well-renowned Russian aviator and just a fantastic flyer.
Yes.
He was the flight instructor. He flew the airplane, and we went up, and he was in the back. I was in the front. The MiG-25, the normal MiG-25 is a single-seater. The one I was in was a trainer that has an extended nose.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back. But truly, only in America. Only in America.
Only in America. And a guy from anywhere.
Launch himself.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2002.
Get a break and maybe grow up to be president. Only in America. Giants.